Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. I am Lee Cantor, and I'm not joined in the studio with Amy Otto because she's out and about somewhere traveling. But I do have an interesting show. I got these two people off the street. I just found them. They were in the lobby chatting it up. And I got Kathy Iconis, is that right?
Yes, it is.
And then you brought a friend of yours, Eric. Yeah.
Eric Holtzclaw.
Holtzclaw. Yeah. Well, that sounds like a Harry Potter name.
That's right.
He's a wizard. And so, Kathy, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do and what brought you here?
Okay, well, my name's Kathy Iconis. I am president and founder of Iconis Group, which is a virtual CFO company. We do outsourced accounting for small businesses, mostly in the Atlanta area, but all over the United States, too. And what we do is we go in and help businesses better run their business and help the owners understand the numbers, translate what's going on, and give them the tools so that they can manage their business to the best possible scenario.
Now, I've been in business a while, various businesses over the years, and my accountant only sees me once a year. Is that
right.
That's not what I do.
Yeah, I actually stay away from tax work.
So
but
no taxes.
No taxes. I go in and it's financial accounting, management accounting
sort of thing. What does that mean?
So it's really using the numbers to give the management of the company something that they can understand. And, you know, most of the time people look at numbers and they just go, bleh, yuck.
Right.
You know, so we got to make it fun. We got to make it interesting and we got to tell a story with the numbers. So that's what I do. I come in and I make it interesting for them and I relate it back to what their decisions are and how they can really look at it and say, oh, well, we can improve here. We can do this. We can do that.
And but so when you're saying the numbers, what are these numbers?
These numbers?
These numbers you speak of.
Fancy.
Where do you get these
it's
numbers?
It's my magic that I
the
do.
Magic numbers. No.
Well, it's all the transactions, everything, the data that goes into the accounting system. We're going to pull it out and we're going to analyze it.
So you're taking like my revenue and my expenses.
Revenue, expenses.
And then you're going to do
assets,
some.
Assets, everything.
You use those magic spreadsheets and put them in the right places. And then you're going to help me. What, forecast the future?
We can do forecasting. We can look at your profitability of different business lines. We can do a number of things, but it all ranges on the business. What I like to do is I go in and I really sit down with the business owner and get an understanding of what they're doing and where their problem areas are, and we attack that first.
Now, what size companies do you deal with? Because, you know, most small businesses, they do what I do with the accountant once a year. But bigger companies have a CFO where that's their job is to do this kind of stuff on a daily basis. So
It ranges. I do help with, you know, very solopreneurs just starting out business-wise, help them with their bookkeeping, get them in a good process from the beginning so they can grow their business and it's scalable and they can attain a good amount of growth and keep on going with it. But I also work on the higher end all the way up to $10 million in revenue of they don't necessarily have a finance person full time in the office. So what they need is just getting to that point of, okay, we have a bookkeeper, we know what we're doing here, but maybe there's some opportunity to do something new with the business or whatever. And that's where I come in.
Now, is there a revenue point where like that, where you come into play? Like, is it kind of a feel situation?
It's kind of a feel situation. I think most businesses, once you get up to about 10 million, you're going to have someone full time.
Right. But what about prior to that? When do you move from just me having a box of receipts to you?
It ranges. It also depends on the type of business you have. So if you're doing a lot of transaction, but low dollar transactions, then you're probably going to need me sooner.
Right.
But with Eric's company, his company is high dollar transactions. And so you have less of them that you have to worry about. So they needed me a little later in the business process.
All right. So that's a good segue to Eric. Nice work, Kathy.
You're welcome.
Now, Eric, why don't you talk about a little bit what you do?
So I'm a chief executive officer of a company called User Insight, which is actually just up the street. We're at 50 Glen Lake, so we're at 1 right now, so it was an easy drive down. We're an international research firm headquartered in Atlanta. We do about 90 to 120 projects a year. We're recognized in the last 3 years as one of the fastest growing privately held companies by Inc. And we have a group of researchers and strategists working with Fortune 500 and Global 2000 customers to do what's called user research. So we'll take a product that they're not making the sales that they expect, getting too many support calls, or maybe they're trying to make sure before it goes to market that it's working the way it should. And they'll bring users in, and we do testing to see what needs to be improved.
So you talk to the end user directly?
We do. We do. We talk to probably 3,000 to 4,000 respondents over the course of a given year. So even though we don't have large transactions as it relate, or many transactions as it relates to customers paying us, we pay lots and lots and lots of people.
I talk to lots and lots of people.
Yes.
Now, when you're in your business, how apprehensive are companies to have you talk to the end user?
Actually, it depends on the business. The ones that you know that do the type of thing.
What about my used car salesman friend?
Your used car salesman friend. We've actually talked to your used car salesman friend before. Typically, though, we're working with corporations, large Fortune 500 or Global 2000 that are putting out maybe a technology-based product or some other product. And you can tell the difference between companies that do the type of work we do and companies that don't. So some that have the higher-end brands where they really paid attention. We all know and love Apple, and we know Apple does an extensive amount of user research. So those.
So what would be an example about how Apple does this kind of user research?
Well, I mean, when the iPhone was being released, there were lots of kind of spy pictures of Steve Jobs walking around with it, making sure that it worked. And then we know that they carried them as employees.
Right, and they gave them to bloggers, right?
Yeah,
they leave them
like
at restaurants.
Right, exactly, stuff like that. So ours is a more formalized process than that, but bringing people in and having them use the product. And it's interesting to see it from the user's perspective because people get so tied up in building the product and having the idea within the company, and then taking a user who's intended to use the product and seeing them kind
actually use it.
Yeah.
It might not be the same as they imagine.
Exactly.
Now, do you do these kind of user groups as a focus group where you lock them in a conference room with some donuts and have a facilitator, or are you actually out in the field and grabbing them in real life?
Actually, we do both. We run about 40% of our studies out of our facility. We have a 14,000 square foot facility just up the street, and it has a we don't use one-way glass. One-way glass was invented in the 1900s,
right.
And we think
is
an ineffective way of actually doing research.
Well, you're in the back giggling.
Yeah, we have 60-inch plasmas, I think, in the new space, and cameras set up in the room. So we'll bring respondents in and have them use the product, and then we watch and record what they're doing and find where there's some opportunities to improve the product.
So that kind of data is still, you think that's as valid as just given a person, just having them use it in real life?
Oh, absolutely. It's a lot more valid than having them use it in real life.
Well, it's almost you need to do that before it goes to the real life test with people.
Right, exactly. We do most of our studies as one-on-ones. We don't do a lot of focus groups. So you talked about that a second ago. We actually would rather hear six individuals tell us something than hear six people.
Because I've been in, when I was in college, I did some focus group thing, and it seemed like people could manipulate that. There'd be like one bully kind of person and take over. Everybody else is, just sits back and then nods their head.
Right, and they're like, whatever I can do to get out of this room and get my 100 bucks.
Get my 50 bucks, That was exactly.
So you have to have a really good moderator, and sometimes you can't even.
So how'd you get into this?
So back in the 1990s, I was a product manager for a bunch of startups here in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
This is actually number 10 for me from a company perspective.
There you go.
And in 95, I was...
10's the charm?
Yeah, 10's the charm. It's actually, I think there is a statistic around that, about how many you have to do before it works out. So we did a product that's actually still in market called NoX, and my marketing manager took us kicking and screaming into a usability lab back in 95, about a week before we were supposed to launch.
So you weren't for this?
I was not for it. And 15 minutes into watching the first user struggle with registration, and we were taking credit cards before anybody knew how to do that, I was like, this is golden. I love it. And I fell in love with it. Mm-hmm. So I had the opportunity back in 2002 with two business partners to start the company during the last recession that not many people other than those of us in technology remember. And we've done well. So it's been
so now you got to a certain level, and then that's where Kathy came in? Or what was your pain?
Well, my pain was that being somewhat of a control freak and having
your assistant just tased you. Yeah. Your eyes twitching.
So I read a book a couple of years ago called E-Myth, which is by Michael Gerber, and it was over spring break. And what that book does is it talks to an entrepreneur about working on their business and not in their business.
So you bought that?
I agreed with it, and I was resourcing everything.
That requires you to delegate.
It does. It does, and I thought until I read that book that I was actually relatively
you
good
thought
delegating.
You were delegating.
Yeah. And so
who knew?
Who knew?
You weren't.
I know, right. So then I came back and started to give parts of the organization over to people within, because you know, we had grown to a nice size. We were 20 to 25 people,
right,
starting to kind of verticalize the company. But finances was one of the things that, it's just a hard thing to share. It's a hard thing to take.
Because that's the money.
Yeah, it's the money, right? It's like the things coming
in. To delegate that, that's a tricky one.
So as I looked at kind of areas that we had distributed and that people had.
So you had an accountant though, right?
We had an accountant, but the funny thing about Kathy doing her introduction is I think the first time I talked with her, the second or third words out of her mouth was, I don't do taxes.
And you're like, great.
Yes. Thought,
well, and I was like, okay, well, she doesn't do taxes, but, you know, because...
I get that a lot. Everyone,
no, I think
they go, you're a CPA.
Right.
So you must do taxes. Right. And I have to explain, there's a lot of different fields out there within the CPA realm that, you know,
I don't
focus on taxes.
I think it's a brilliant move to not do taxes.
I do.
I do,
too.
No, really, because then you can
I don't want to do taxes.
Then you can be friends with all the accounts that do, right?
Yes, yes, so definitely.
You're not a threat to them.
And we still do have a tax accountant.
Right.
So, yeah, and Kathy's very happy about that.
Yes. I mean, and the point is there's different perspectives that we all have. I'm looking at running a business, and I'm not keeping up with the tax code. So the tax guy is going to know how to save Eric money in different areas that I would have no idea about.
Well, it actually has very little to do with how the company's run, but may make some decisions as to how we're going to do
it. It might be higher level things and a shift in how you do certain things, but it's not, I get down into the nuts and bolts of how you're running the business.
Right. We don't run a project based on the taxes.
Right. Yeah. The tax ramifications.
Exactly.
Right.
That's not at all what we're looking at. So
yeah. Definitely.
Understanding things like Section 179 write-offs and things like that, and that really doesn't play much into what we do from a day-to-day basis.
So then, so Kathy came on board in a virtual manner. Does she come actually to your place X number of days a month, or how does it work? How does your relationship work?
It works. I mean, I'm comfortable with working with people virtually, so
right,
we do a lot
we've
of...
Right, been in technology, so it has...
Yeah. So, you know, iChat and... sending documents back and forth, and she'll come in when it makes sense. If there's something that we're rolling out new to the team, to make sure that they all understand it and they can ask the right kinds of questions and those types of things. You know, I started at the beginning of the year deciding that the finance area was something that I needed to hand over, and interviewed several people who were in the space. This is not
Didn't just go to Craigslist.
Right. No. No.
Some people do advertise on Craigslist.
Do they?
Yes.
Well, there you go.
You could have gone there.
And the funny thing is, we've used, you know, I don't know what how you call this, but the fractions of people. So I have a fractional HR person who comes in once a week. And so
So you've already been comfortable with this kind of virtual, you know, part-time basis.
Right. I don't need you all the time, but I need somebody to come in.
I need you when I need you.
Right,
and
exactly.
You, right.
And so I interviewed a lot of people. Kathy was probably one of eight that I talked to the course of a 2 months.
Did you know that, Kathy?
No, I didn't know that, and it didn't even feel like that when we had the conversation.
Yeah.
Well, sadly enough, I think initially I had accidentally blown off Eric for a call and realized a day later I was supposed to be on a call with him and was not on a call with him.
Right.
And then it was 20, 30 minutes through the conversation of the call, I realized he was actually wanting to hire me.
What did you think that he wanted?
Well, we had met through Twitter pretty much. I was starting AtlantaSmall.biz, which is a blog for small business owners, and I was looking for contributors.
Oh, so you just thought it was...
I was going to Eric to be a contributor, and he's asking me all these questions.
And you're like, wow, the other contributors don't ask me this many questions.
Yeah. And like, ditzy me. I was like, oh, wait a second. You need someone.
Right. Yeah. And so, so
you needed someone with that kind of high business acumen.
Right. Yeah, exactly. The smartest one out of the group.
Well, but the funny thing is, and to Kathy's testament, she'd gone out and started her own company. And that's right. what I liked about Kathy. I mean, being a serial entrepreneur myself.
Right. You get brownie points for
trying. Yeah, you do. Right? I mean, you know, she was Kathy Iconis with Iconis Group. And I liked that. A lot of the guys that I was talking to were, there are a lot of other companies that have, you know, you can be a CFO at a company. And then when you decide to sort of semi-retire, you go out and kind of hang your shingle with them. And it's more of a franchise model.
Right.
And I didn't really want to been there, done that, CFO. Right. I was afraid that in that situation I would have someone who would come in and tell me how I was doing things wrong.
Right.
I really was looking for someone to come in and kind of roll up their sleeves and understand
the company. And grow with you. Right.
Exactly. And I could tell in my conversations with Kathy that she was willing to do that, to come in and really get underneath the numbers, understand how the company worked.
Do you have an example of where she really benefited you, where she came in and maybe made you rethink something?
Well, I had a set of – well, there's a lot of places because, you know, the funny thing that you talked about is, you know, companies having full-time finance people. Mm-hmm. So I'm the full-time finance people, but I'm a computer science person.
Right, exactly. That's not what you do. Like, you have to do it, but you don't want to do it.
So I've built all these crazy spreadsheets and all this other kind of ways of kind of running and looking at the books that I understood.
Right.
I understood
really
well.
It made perfect sense.
Exactly. And one of the things that Kathy did to begin with that's been very helpful is establishing a set of account codes for us. So our P&L, our profit and loss, and our balance sheets, and they're all broken down by account code. And it's easy for us to put costs in certain places. And that's definitely not something that we had.
And then you wouldn't have thought of that on your own.
Right. Well, I don't think a lot of... In fact, to the tax CPAs and bookkeepers don't think of using your chart of accounts as something that you can use for management purposes. So organizing it into buckets of, you know, they have a sales department. Okay, all those codes are in this area. They all have numbers now. They can refer to them as numbers. They can pull reports in that area.
Right.
All that sort of stuff. Whereas, you know, before it was all over the place.
Well, and the other problem you have is that you have expenses that seem the same. So you have travel and living.
Right.
And travel and living may be project-based, or it may be based for sales, or it may be in operations. So getting people to help code that kind of information with the way we have the books established before, it's easier to say, well, no, that's that account code versus this account
code. And so it filters to the right place as opposed to just being in a big pile somewhere.
Right.
Right.
And so that's what you brought to the table, Kathy. Impressive.
Thanks. Well, it's always a process, and I'm a big organization nut when it comes to coming into the business and saying, okay, here's this process. Here's where we're falling short. Here's where there's improvement, and let's, you know, find a system that'll work better for you.
Yeah, and I am all about efficiency. The way that our company is successful in general, we turn projects faster than any other company in our space. And it's about being able to do something, do it once,
do
not
it right,
touch it
fast.
Again.
Right.
Right. You got to have quality and speed.
Speed. Right. Right. And Kathy got that from the beginning, that I only wanted to touch a receipt once. I wanted it to go into one system and
be
it show
done.
Up where it was supposed to. So
now, can you take us back to that moment? Okay, you decided to hire Kathy. So what was that first, like, how do you integrate her into your process? Was that tricky? Because, like you said, you're kind of a control freak.
Well,
and then
was,
she's like, seems to be like, I'm the quarterback here, so get out of my way.
No. I didn't see that at all. What I like about Kathy is that she's willing to ask tough questions, and our organization has always been about that. We want people to...
Yeah, you don't want yes people.
I do not want yes people. I don't want to be surrounded by yes people, because it's not going to help me at all. I want somebody to kind of question why we're doing what we're doing and how we're doing it. But I will tell you, the first meeting that I had with her was the scariest, because...
This
I,
is before you hired her? Or this,
this is when
is
we hired her. I decided to engage her to come in to start working
was
with
it between
us.
Her and someone else?
No, honestly, once I narrowed it down, I could get a good feeling.
You had eight in the pile here.
I know, and I could get through that. I would do like an hour-long, typically, either in-face or over-the-phone interview with the person. Mm-hmm. And I got a good feeling towards the end as to who I thought I could work with.
A gut feel?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was one of those, we're in the meeting, he's like, okay, let's get started. You know, okay.
Yeah, I mean,
let's go.
I've been doing this long enough that I feel like when picking people to work with, that I kind of have a feeling of who I think I can work well with.
That's a good rapport everything, right.
So what I liked is, you know, Kathy was on her own. She started her own company. She was,
She was right there. You did your due diligence. Everything checked out.
Yeah.
And
I thought I could work with her. Like, she had a good banter.
Right. So that's important. Right. No, you got to live with the person. You got to make sure that it's going to work out. You don't want to dread every meeting.
You can't take business so seriously that you're not having any fun anymore.
Right.
So, and it's a matter of, okay, we're going to look at these things. It's going to be scary, but we'll have fun in the process. Right. And, you know, it's not, and I think your big concern, Eric, was that I was going to say, there's something wrong here. You did something wrong. Right. And my philosophy was, you've done this, you've grown your business to this size, and that's amazing. And I'm impressed with all of that. So I just want to see it and see how I can help.
Right. And
is that how you typically work with people? So you work around the kind of the parameters they've already set?
Right.
You adapt to that?
I'm going to push you if you're doing something wrong. And, you know, if something, of course, if it's unethical or something like that, I'm going to be kicking, yelling, and screaming and all this sort of stuff. I'm not going to work with you that way. But within business and within accounting, you do have flexibility on how you can organize your business and look at numbers. So with that, it's just a matter of, okay, how are you doing it? And we joke around, like, what's your crazy of how you're managing everything?
Everybody has a crazy, right?
Yeah. And it's learning Eric's language or someone else's language of the business and how they're running it.
Right.
And I work with that. Mm-hmm. So I'm not trying to take them out of their comfort zone too much.
Yeah.
I push the boundaries at times, but...
Yeah, and when we first started the company, we were using QuickBooks, and I couldn't get the information I needed out of it to really kind of run the company effectively. So being a computer geek and loving Excel, I built these really complex spreadsheets and systems that I understood. And this one spreadsheet
that were custom made just for your company.
Yeah, this one spreadsheet that I kidded that if it ever got lost, the company would go out of business. Right.
Right.
And so,
I think a lot of people have that, you know, because if you don't have the accounting background, you find your own way to do it.
Right. And the other risk that we had taken as a company, and it was purposeful, is we do fixed price engagements.
Mm-hmm.
And a company in our space that does fixed price engagements for the type of work we do is really rare.
Right.
And it was very important that we do fixed price engagements because many of our customers can only stroke a certain check with a certain budget. So we have to understand our cost. We have to understand what it takes to deliver something in multiple countries in multiple ways.
Right.
And I sort of had all that in my brain. Like I could price everything out of my brain and, you know, these big spreadsheets and all this other kind of stuff. So to sit with Kathy the first time and open all this stuff up, I kid that it was like, you know, that kitchen drawer you have that you don't want anybody to see,
right?
You're like, oh my gosh, you know. And I kept thinking she's gonna judge me. She's gonna tell me.
You kept
terrible.
On saying that too. I was like, no,
it's okay.
And you haven't seen Kathy's private blog where she kind of tells about every client's kind of wacky accounting.
She does that under a different Twitter name.
unfortunately, he does follow me on Twitter, so he gets everything.
Right. You should have seen this CEO how they do accounting.
Exactly.
So, but I'm sure you run it. That's just the nature of the business. Like you said, everybody does it a little differently.
Right.
I'm sure he wasn't doing anything too insane.
No, it's not that anyone's doing anything bad.
Right.
It's just a matter of
being efficient.
You have your own crazy. That this is how I do it.
But ultimately, his objective was quality and speed. And that's something you could help him with. His
way
wasn't the most efficient. It just was the way that made sense in his brain.
And what happened is that he ended up being the bottleneck for things of the salespeople.
Wow, Eric.
That's true. Yeah, that's definitely true.
For the salespeople would have to come to him and say, okay, how do we price this and whatever. So then he created a spreadsheet.
Yeah, that's not Gerber friendly there. I'll tell you that.
So it's when everyone's coming to you for the decision.
It makes you feel good, but it's not the most efficient way.
Exactly.
Things. You can't take vacation.
Right.
No. So definitely.
Or if you do, your phone rings a lot.
Right, a lot.
And you can't focus on.
The bigger thing.
Yeah, the direction of the company and everything, because you're in this
always putting
minutia.
Out fires, right.
Right.
So, you know, it was trying to step back from everything and be
and
able to
kind
look
of
at
40,000 foot view of what's going
Absolutely.
On.
Absolutely.
So is that, now this, I would imagine, had a dramatic effect on your productivity yourself personally, because now you can delegate this big function.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a learning curve. And the funny thing is, I think I'd come up with a pricing spreadsheet when Kathy first came in, but there were some things that could be improved on how we actually put that into the process. And I think we've also uncovered ways, like looking at client services and things like that, that they were building a bunch of systems to track things that weren't as efficient just because we needed checks and balances.
Right. So, and it doesn't stop with Eric. It's looking at everyone in the business and trying to find ways that everyone can run better.
Right.
So how painful was this transition?
the transition hasn't been pain. Like I said, the most painful thing was having that first conversation and opening up the sets of spreadsheets that I really right. never showed anyone.
Right.
Like, I'm like, no one sees this. Partly because
no one could understand it.
No one could understand it. Right. Right. It wasn't something that was easy to teach someone else.
Right.
But once we got there, the good thing about Kathy is that she understands that I don't want to implement something into the company that's going to be difficult for them to consume.
Right.
So we've built processes that are easy for people to take on. And
so that's your user insight from this. Uh-huh.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
Right. So we've not been impactful. I think that we've held back on certain things until we knew that the company could kind of take it. That,
right.
you know, we weren't going to make huge changes.
Right.
We were going to make small.
How long did that take? Like a week?
Well, we're still making.
Still,
it's a process.
Yeah, it's a process.
It never ends, I guess.
Well,
you're still tweaking.
I think at the end of the day, my goal is to help them grow so that they can afford a full-time CFO.
Oh, so that you're not involved
right.
anymore?
Yeah, so
you're trying to get yourself out of a job.
My goal is for them to fire me. It's great, right?
As fast as possible.
Great business model on my side.
That's that business acumen we were talking about
yeah,
earlier.
Yeah, all these great things that I've set up for myself. But, I mean, I'm a management junkie. I love seeing businesses grow. I love understanding, you know, your perspective on how you run your business. And I'm learning a lot from Eric along the way. And I, you know, throw my two cents in and we try to keep on growing and figuring this whole thing out. So it's a process. And like you said, we can't do I can't like day one say, okay, we're going to change all of this.
Right.
Because they're going to flip out and right. they're not going to like me.
Right. And
you
we
know?
Don't want that.
No. And they're going to fire me way too early.
Right.
need so.
Yeah. It needs to be a good firing.
Yeah. It needs to be a good parting right. ways.
Not that.
Well, right. I mean, if you think about it, like what I'm doing is trying to potentially fire myself. I mean, I've
right.
always been responsible for these areas
sure.
and I'm trying to delegate those down so that I concentrate on better things. And the things we do for our customers, we really at the end of the day want them to not need us any longer. So when
right.
we test a product in field, the best thing that could happen is for them to bring it back for a confirmation and everything test correctly. That
Does
means
that
we
ever
did our
happen?
Job. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Customers that follow it correctly, that final confirmation, you know you've nailed it.
Wow.
Some products, they bring them in and, you know,
it
there's a lot
a while.
Of work. Yeah,
right.
there's a lot of work, but at least there's an end road for it. And they understand why,
right.
you know. And I think that the good thing we did with Kathy is just looking at processes that were the most inefficient.
Right.
So what's the most inefficient? What's
so
the
has
biggest
it,
bottleneck?
Had, was there any project creep where you're now involved in other areas?
Well, okay, so one of the first things we did was with back to your accounting system that you were on QuickBooks for Mac. And my process is I come in and I kind of give you the options, give you the research, and let you make the decision. So
research regarding what? Like to
accounting
leave,
systems.
But to
right.
leave QuickBooks.
Well, he had QuickBooks uh-huh. for Mac. And
right.
so
but we had like it was a single installation
right.
version.
Right.
So we
one
didn't have
version.
Access
right.
to it.
Right. So we looked at hosting, you know, a Windows version on his Mac or going to QuickBooks Online. And I gave him all the, you know, pluses and
right.
But
so you were
going to
stay in QuickBooks, though. That wasn't.
Well, I think we looked at some. We might have looked at some other options too.
Yeah, I mean, there are other
right. There are other accounting systems out there. It's just a matter of what fit them
right.
the best. And so he made the decision to go to QuickBooks Online, which has been a great decision. And
so that allowed other people to access QuickBooks.
Yeah,
yes.
that was my number one thing. We're a big software as a service company, so
right.
We'd
so
like
you might
to,
as well.
Well, meaning that we like to concentrate on what we do well, and so anything else that we can get that we pay for on a monthly basis that
right.
then gets updated automatically,
right.
and you don't have to install
That's
it locally.
Congruent with your culture. So
yeah,
right.
yeah, exactly.
Right.
We're very remote. A lot of our stuff runs remotely, so I really wanted QuickBooks Online to work. I really
yes.
wanted that.
You were
to
rooting
be
for that.
I was against it.
Really?
yeah. I was like, I don't like this, you having to rent software, da da da. But he was completely right. It was the best decision.
Right.
So,
it's, yeah, definitely given us a much, much more insight, and we can give people different levels of insight
and access. And,
yeah,
right.
And,
exactly.
Right.
There's so much flexibility with it, and it's.
So now you're a fan?
Yes. Now I'm a fan. I get a whole bunch of
so you
other
give it,
clients.
You
on
give
it
a like.
Yes.
A Facebook like.
A Facebook like.
Okay.
She tweets it.
Yes. Until they... I think everyone has a love-hate relationship with QuickBooks
right.
in the first place, so there's days that I hate it. But, yeah, most of the time I like it.
Yeah.
And so that was a big change.
Yes.
And then,
yeah.
and especially now you went from delegating to one person to now you're sharing, you know, now everybody's seeing
right.
not everything, but they're seeing more things than they had in the past.
Yes.
How did the company deal with that? The culture, they were up for that?
I think they've done a good job with it. We had started, we have a couple of bonus programs in place that were based on goals.
With your imaginary spreadsheet that only you knew how it worked. No bonuses again.
No bonuses.
I plugged it in the spreadsheet.
We do a weekly update, so people would know there was something a little fishy in that if we were selling deals and there was no bonus happening. But yeah, so they were starting to see more numbers, and it is hard for someone, as you start a company, you start to run it, to start and launch those numbers. But as we've been on the Inc. 5000 list, there's more kind of
good numbers.
Understanding, of what the numbers are.
Well, it's a challenge. What do you find, Kathy, regarding that? When you're sharing numbers with a company, everything's great when the numbers are doing great. But when the numbers start not doing great, or there's a period they're not doing great, how does the...
Well, I think the biggest thing that Eric's gotten out of this is that his staff can actually understand why he's in a bad mood sometimes. And when he's in a good mood, you know, because if you see the numbers...
The numbers are the numbers.
And he's updating them. And that was his whole point, is he's tired of people coming to him and say, I want to go spend more money when it might be tight this month whatever.
And they think it's arbitrary, but now you can show
them understand
the data.
They actually, I think, are getting a better idea, especially as we've given more and more insight into how they can directly impact those numbers and where there may be bad assumptions. I mean, I'm not a frontline delivery person any longer, so things could have changed in the way that they're delivering projects. And I'm really looking for them to come back to me and say, hey, you're pricing it for this, and I really need it to be that.
So what we've done now is we've rolled out budgets to different people, and they're going to be responsible for different areas.
And this is the first time that that's happened?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there was never kind of budget responsibility to this level?
Not at a macro level. So these are macro budgets. Each project has a micro budget associated with it. So you have this much to spend on catering, this much on recruiting, respondent fees, those types of things. And this is more of a macro level budget. So people have responsibility for their direct line report, payrolls.
And this is something that without Kathy, this wouldn't have happened.
Well, no. I mean, without doing the organization and Kathy, then the organization and the way that we've established it, I'm now comfortable. I'm the one who actually pushed for it.
Oh, yeah.
Once again, you're
his idea.
He's the leader I can see in this.
Well, no, but the funny thing is at the beginning, I mean, I was really nervous about handing any of the stuff over and showing anything to anybody. And now I'm like, here are the numbers.
Yeah, you're like, you deal with it.
Not my problem anymore, right?
Well, and I think the point that he was making, we had a budget meeting with his staff and went through it, and he was saying, you guys are on the front lines now. So if you find an opportunity to save money and spend it in other areas,
do it.
Be more efficient in things, go for it.
Right.
So, you know, hopefully we're handing off the numbers to them. Of course, Eric still has the 40,000 view of, you know, being able to see if things are in line and, you know, hold people accountable for it.
Right. And just like pricing at the beginning of the year, where we couldn't price a project effectively unless I was involved in most of those.
Now other people can price?
Well, definitely people can price. We have a very complicated set of
very complicated spreadsheet. But
is there a magic eight ball involved in this spreadsheet? No.
Well, I think...
I'm probably still the magic eight ball, right? Yeah. We really, really want to do this one.
I think it's one of those... when you do the usability testing and everything, the spreadsheet you had before, Eric, was made for you and you understood it. And what I tried to do was change it so that a salesperson can look at it and understand what was happening, and they could just fill in their stuff. And then we have all the calculations happening somewhere else, and we're not confusing the matter. So it's just a matter of, I just reformatted it a little bit.
Right.
And, you know, then they're able to go in, and we keep on making changes to it and all this
But they
stuff.
Can plug in so many variables and outprops a price that you feel comfortable with.
Exactly.
And it may not be the exact price that you would have come up with, but it's going to be...
It's probably pretty close.
Close,
I mean,
Well, and we have an overhead margin in there that they have to stay in line with.
Uh-huh.
So they can't have...
They can't change that variable.
No.
Right.
They can't sell a deal the pricing knows whether
your admin tasers them
automatically. Exactly.
Exactly.
They
yes.
cross the line.
Everyone has one of those.
Right. Exactly. It's company policy. Cool. So,
yeah, but you were saying like pricing, that was the one thing that I still had control over. And then I became a bottleneck for, we need to hire additional people. We need to bring in more recruiting for this project. So we're hoping.
So that's a recurring theme, you as a bottleneck.
Exactly.
In just different areas of the company.
Exactly. So Kathy's helped me to give people the information they need to help run their departments or their groups more effectively.
Right.
So your role has expanded then outside of just
Well, when you say the CFO, the work you've helped with client services is sort of in the same line.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's I've touched more of the company along the way
than maybe you initially envisioned that you would.
Well, but our initial agreement was, okay, I'm going to give this much of, you know, my time to you a month, and we're just going to see where we go with it. So, and it was, you know, we're going to do ad hoc reporting for management, and we'll do this and that. And so as different things change with the company, I'm just going with the flow of, okay, let's look at this.
Is that common? Is that how typically you work with clients?
With clients at this level, absolutely. Because if I come in and I give you this detailed thing, I'm going to do blah, 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 blah. You might miss something along the way. So,
and it has to evolve. There has to be room for that.
Right. And, you know, like I've said, it's a process. We just go step by step, and different ideas come out of different meetings. And, you know, another thing that they're doing now is they use Salesforce, and we're going to hopefully next year integrate that with QuickBooks and find all new things that we can do with it.
Right.
So it's, yeah, it's getting new technology and figuring out what we can do with it and find new ways to do stuff.
Yeah. Entering things one time and
You're big on that.
Well, it is. I mean, it's a big deal.
I am too.
Well, it's a big deal because the more times you touch something, the more inefficient you are and the more likely you are to have a mistake.
Right.
Absolutely.
So if you put something in and it's incorrect, then it goes out that way.
And someone's got to fix it somewhere along the line.
Yeah. And further down the path, the person has less and less information about what the project was anyway.
And it snowballs to a bigger problem.
Exactly.
Right. And I have a lot of experience. I was a forensic accountant in the past and an auditor, so I can see how things can get messed up.
Right.
And I try to stop it before that happens and set something up so that, okay, we're going to be as efficient and keep that quality.
Now, did you help them in planning for 2011?
Yes. We have a budget, and that's what we've gone through, and we've actually taken that budget and split it out to different department heads now. So I think we're excited about what 2011 is going to be. There's, you know, a lot of unknowns still of where all the company's going to go and what it can do.
So what are your goals for 2011 for you personally, and then Eric for you and your company?
For me personally, for Iconis Group, we have a crazy goal of doubling our revenue in 2011.
Wow, so. Eric, that's a lot of pressure on you.
Eric just needs to be, you know, a referral source for me and just keep on telling people great things about me and stuff. But we're going to keep on helping small businesses.
But how do you scale your business with you as, you know, you're going on site and helping? Do you have a staff?
I don't. Well, I do most of my work virtually.
Mm-hmm.
I do go to on site for different clients on different times, but I don't have a set schedule with them.
Right.
With Eric and I, we have a weekly meeting that we just kind of recap what's going on.
Virtually or in person?
Virtually.
Right.
We have a conference call. I have go-to meetings, so if we ever need to share computer screens or do anything, it's
so
just like
once
we're there.
After you've had your initial consult and you kind of get the feel for the company, then you can go off on your own and do what you got to do.
Right. Yeah. And it's a matter of, the point is, when you go virtual, you still need to make it feel like you're there.
Right.
And you need to be conscious of that and keep the line of communication open with people. And I think that gets back to, if you're so serious about business, people aren't going to want to talk to you.
Right.
But if you, you know, make the conversation somewhat enjoyable, you can laugh along the way, then it'll be more comfortable to talk about different things.
So, Eric, what about you? What big plan? Double revenue?
Yeah, same. Double revenue. Well, I mean,
you could.
Yeah, we could. We've experienced in good years 25% to 40% growth. Mm-hmm. So that you know, and we're set for that. Our space actually allows us to. We could probably 1.5 times the size of the company pretty easily within the existing space, and have great processes in place for bringing new people on. And
how long have you guys been in business?
Incorporated in January of 2002. So we're coming up on 9 years. Yeah.
10 years?
Yeah.
Almost.
Yeah.
Then it's time to do something else, right?
Yeah.
No. This is the one I've been at the longest.
It's helping.
So, you know, like, yeah, typically it was like 18 months.
Right.
It's helping his average go up.
Right, exactly.
I think that's my past too. So.
Yeah, I've gotten to watch this one, go through adolescence.
You're not getting bored yet? Gotta.
There's
no 10-year itch.
New challenges, new challenges with the company, new ways of kind of taking parts of the company and growing them in ways that maybe we haven't done in the past. The space we're in is it's a space that's been around for a while.
Right.
And what we do with the space is make it so much more efficient and so much more technologically based, I guess. I mean,
their office build out is awesome.
Yes. So
I'm extremely impressed every time I go in there. I'm like, this is so cool.
Yes. So so there's a lot of opportunity still in the space where we do, you know, qualitative work. Almost 95% of what we do is qualitative type, one-on-one qualitative, right, meaning in person talking, right, with someone. Lots of opportunity in the quantitative space. So surveys online, that type of thing. I think some of the things we're working with Kathy is taking more systems down to just one system. So we used to have systems with spreadsheets in between those systems, right, and how do we remove those spreadsheets?
So you're streamlining.
Yeah, streamlining.
Right. Touching once.
Touching, right, once. And then we're moving to online bill pay.
Yes.
At the beginning of the year for the company, which I've been doing online bill pay since, right, like forever. 94, right, right? And so we start talking about it for the company. Everybody's like, we're going to do what? I'm like, how do you pay your car?
Everyone's doing it at home.
So, right.
So why do we need all these?
If you can do it for the same amount as a check, you know, a stamp, right, pretty much, then why? Right. So many companies are still writing checks.
Yeah, and I think, though, from a company perspective, it's different. I think as an individual, you know, it's your account and the money's, right, coming in and out.
It's that control. And,
right, because there's
always about control.
Yeah, it is. I mean, the paper check,
right,
the fact that I physically
sign
that,
right,
paper check and see what the amount is.
Right, because anybody could type anything in, right, and all of a sudden I have no money.
Well, and the great thing, well, it's this system called Bill.com, and basically you can set up approvers for checks. So you,
right,
can set up those controls in there. So then you can go back and have an audit trail of how were things,
right,
paid instead of someone just going into their online account saying, hey,
how much money's in there?
Yeah,
that's how much I would like. Thank you.
That's actually a funny story about QuickBooks Online. So Kathy had all the accounts set up on QuickBooks Online, and I had access. And so I was in monkeying around with things. And she called me. She's like, what have you been doing? I was like, what do you mean? She's like, I can see the history. I know what you have. Oh, good. Big brother is watching now.
Right.
That's great. So
nice.
Well, there's, you know, it's a great, again, I work with a lot of, in
look,
the past, to how people can screw things up. So if,
right,
there's an audit trail of something, then you can go in and see what was done.
Right. Right. Well, but by her actually telling me that, it made me more comfortable with knowing I could release,
yeah,
parts,
right,
of the information over, because we were going to be able to audit.
And soon
what
it'll
happened.
Be on WikiLeaks anyway, so it won't,
right,
matter.
Right. Exactly.
Could you,
yeah,
imagine?
Exactly.
All right. So what is the best way someone can get a hold of you, Kathy, if they want to learn more?
If they just go to my site, iconisgroup.com. That's I-C-O-N-I-S. group.com.
Nice. And Eric?
We are User Insight, userinsight.com.
And what company should contact you?
What company should contact us?
Like, what's a profile of your customer?
We typically work with product managers. So,
mm-hmm,
they're the person who's stuck between development and marketing. So marketing,
right,
has come up with this
great idea,
and development has built it maybe like marketing said.
Right.
And the product managers butts on the line to go out and make sure they actually make the sales that were projected. And so we work really well with those types of people. If it's ideation, so let's say they're at the very beginning of putting something together, then,
right,
that may be a marketing group. It may be someone who's saying, hey, we don't know what to build. We have these products out in market. Let's do some testing to
see
what people want.
Where there's traction.
Yeah, the big difference between our company, and it's really important, is that we work to help companies build products that users want.
Right.
We don't figure out how to sell a product to a user.
That exists, right.
Yeah. So it's about understanding the user, understanding their persona and how they kind of interact and what they really want from that company, not what that company wants to sell that user.
Right. Cool. All right, guys. Well, a great show. I appreciate you guys coming on. And that wraps up another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. Hopefully, Amy will be here next week. See you guys later.